Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Trial begins for aggravated assault case. Angelica Becerra told jurors Monday she doesn't remember how many shots were fired that night 4 years ago, but she does remember her 16-year-old son running toward the shooting. She also remembers the sporty white car that drove by before the shooting and afterward. According to Assistant Ector County District Attorney Elizabeth Howard, that sport white car belonged to Pedro Antonio Gomez, 30. Monday was the first day of Gomez's aggravated assault trial in the 244th Ector County District Court. Howard told jurors that on July 21, 2018, Elaine Gunter, Gilbert Carmona, and Juan Charlie Paez were drinking beer outside Gunter's home near West 5th Street and Edison Avenue, south of Floyd Quinn Park, when Gomez pulled up in his white Challenger shortly after midnight. Gomez got out of his car, stood in the middle of the street, and urged Paez to come fight him, Howard said. Shortly thereafter, Gomez's passenger, later identified as Antonio Herrera, got out of the car and began shooting indiscriminately at everyone there, Howard said. The pair then fled in the Challenger, she said. Paez, Gunter, and Carmona, who all identified Gomez as having been there that night, were shot, Howard said. While authorities never found the gun, they did find a holster in his car, along with .40 caliber ammunition, Howard said. Gomez is facing 3 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, which is punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison on each count. Becerra testified she was picking up her son from his girlfriend's grandmother's house on West 6th Street the night of the shooting. She was already in the car when the shots rang out, and after her son ran toward the shooting, she followed. She saw the white car she'd seen slowly cruise by moments earlier take off quickly after the shooting, saw people laying on the ground, and heard screaming. Becerra told jurors she tried to help one of the men who had been shot as he lay on the grass next to a white pickup truck. Her son, Jonathan Aguirre, now 20, testified he thinks he heard 7 to 10 shots, but it could have been more. He said he saw a white Challenger with dark stripes speeding away from the area of the shooting roughly 5 seconds afterward. Jurors also heard 2 911 calls placed after the shooting. In both, an hysterical woman and a panicked man pled repeatedly for Charlie to talk to them and to stay conscious. Defense attorney Philip Wildman Jr. waived his opening statement. Herrera, 31, pleaded guilty to aggravated assault causing serious bodily injury and was sentenced to 8 years in prison in February 2019. He's currently in the Ector County Jail and is on Wildman's witness list. Judge James Rush is presiding over the trial. Texas sales tax holiday set for August 5th weekend. Texas Comptroller Glenn Heger announced on Monday that he is reminding shoppers they can save money on clothes and school supplies during the state's sales tax holiday from August 5th to 7th. State law exempts sales tax on qualified items such as clothing, footwear, school supplies, and backpacks priced below $100, saving shoppers about $8 on every $100 they spend. The date of the sales tax holiday and list of tax-exempt items are set by the Texas legislature. Most Texans won't hear the back-to-school bell for another month, but it's never too early to take advantage of the opportunity to save money on everything from book bags to ballpoint pens, Heger stated in the press release. With inflation driving prices higher on just about everything, this sales tax holiday provides Texas families some small relief managing the costs associated with kids heading back to classrooms. As a father of three school-age children myself, I know how these expenses can add up. The Comptroller's Office estimates that shoppers will save $112 million in state and local sales tax during this sales tax holiday. Apparel and school supplies that may be purchased tax-free are listed on the Comptroller's website at texastaxholiday.org. During the annual sales tax holiday, qualifying items can be purchased tax-free online or by telephone, mail, custom order, or any other means, including in-store purchases, when either the item is both delivered to and paid for by the customer during the exemption period, the customer orders and pays for the item, and the seller accepts the order during the exemption period for immediate shipment, even if delivery is made after the exemption period ends. Texas's sales tax holiday weekend has been an annual event since 1999. Today's death notices for July 26th. Ramon Ray Ramosquito Mendoza Jr., 54, of Odessa, died Monday, July 18th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Tuesday, July 26th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at a later date. Father Frank Chavez is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Rebecca Lee Ricks Wallace, 64, died Friday, July 22nd in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Salvador Carrasco Jr., 67, died Friday, July 22nd in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, July 25th. Time to Head Back to School. The story was written by Carol A. Keats, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. My husband's first day of school is today. Since he is a department chair at the school where he teaches, he goes back 2 weeks before the kids. This summer has gone by so quickly, it's hard to believe we are already in the back-to-school season. Stores have school supplies at the doors, the back-to-school sale notices are on TV, social media, and the newspaper. Before the kids in your life head off to school, please consider their health care as part of your back-to-school plans. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, recommends these 9 back-to-school tips for having a safe and healthy school year. First, make sure your kids know how and when to wash their hands. Hand washing is the best way to prevent most common illnesses. The CDC recommends these 5 steps for kids when they hand wash: wet, lather, scrub, rinse, and dry. The scrub process should last about 20 seconds. That is about the time it takes to sing the happy birthday song twice. With small kids, it takes time and frequent reminders to build hand-washing skills, so make sure you remind kids to wash before eating, after using the bathroom, after playing outside, and after coughing, sneezing, or blowing their nose. The good thing is, if we teach kids to wash their hands when they're small, it is a healthy habit that will benefit them their entire life. Tip 2 is to eat well and be active. A healthy weight is especially important for kids, as with hand washing, the habits we set for our kids with diet and exercise can follow them long into their lives. Currently, 1 in 5 U.S. children is considered not just overweight, but obese. That extra weight puts kids at risk for asthma, sleep apnea, high blood pressure, high blood cholesterol, and type 2 diabetes, all of which have serious long-term complications. Kids consume nearly half of their daily calories at school, so it's a great time to teach healthy eating habits. Tip 3 is to limit sugary drinks. That goes hand in hand with healthy eating. Tip 4 is don't use e-cigarettes, also known as vapes or vape pens. According to the CDC, 1 in 5 high school students and 1 in 20 middle school students, this is 6th through 8th grades, regularly use e-cigarettes. I know anecdotally by living with a 9th grade teacher, it is something they regularly battle in schools. Vapes are not safe. Nicotine is known to harm developing brains, and we still are learning about the harm to the respiratory system caused by using e-cigarettes. The best prevention for substance abuse of any kind is to talk to your kids about it. The American Academy of Pediatrics has lots of resources for talking to your kids about drugs, alcohol, and tobacco products, including e-cigarettes, on their website at www.healthychildren.org. Tip 5 is to stay cool. We return to school and sports in one of the hottest months of the year, so it's important for kids and parents to remember to limit outdoor activities in the hottest parts of the day, to stay well hydrated, to use sunscreen, and to wear loose, lightweight, and light-colored clothing whenever they are outside to help them stay cool. Tip 6 is to stay safe by using helmets appropriately and paying attention to possible concussions by seeking medical attention if a kid does suffer a head injury. Tip 7 is to plan for emergencies by making sure that the school knows of medications your child takes, any assistive devices they need, and how to reach you and at least one backup person in an emergency. Tip 8 is to connect with your kids. Talk to them. Involve yourself in their lives. There are multiple studies that show kids who feel they belong, are cared for, and are supported by their parents or another adult in their lives are less likely to have adverse health outcomes as teens, such as sexually transmitted diseases, substance abuse, and experiencing physical violence. Tip 9 is to get vaccinated. Vaccines are the most effective tools to prevent serious viral illness, including viruses that can lead to cancers later in life. School is not just a time to prepare your kids academically and socially for life as an adult. It's a great time to set health habits that will give them a long life as an adult. Please consider these health tips as you prepare to send your kids back to school.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, July 23, 2022. Viewpoints. Texas heat renews focus on electricity supply. By Kate Zakowski, MWC Advocacy. It can be unnerving when ERCOT, our state's electric grid operator, issues a call for Texans to conserve power due to rising demand. Lately, it seems like this is a weekly occurrence, which only increases Texans' feelings of unease, chipping away at their confidence in our state's energy infrastructure. Many Texans have unpleasant and traumatic memories of the February 2021 winter storm, which left millions without power, water, and heat for several days, and claimed the lives of 246 Texans. The week of July 11 saw ERCOT, for the second time since May, make an appeal to Texans to conserve power and turn up their thermostats, and we haven't even gotten to August, which is usually our hottest month. Most Texans have already experienced a record number of triple-digit days this summer. This leads to higher electricity demand from consumers and stresses the grid when operating normally. On Monday, July 11, for example, ERCOT reported a new all-time peak demand record of 78.3 gigawatts, passing the previous record of 78.2 set a few days before on July 8. These are not records to be celebrated, but they are instructive to understanding the energy needs of our state today and help us plan for the future. These concerning developments have Texans asking, why have there been so many grid scares in 2022? It's important to keep a balanced and objective perspective. In May, power generators are generally down for scheduled maintenance. Six plants were down at once, so that heat wave brought us uncomfortably close to supply and demand intersecting. In the more recent case this week, lower wind on one day was a factor, but that's always expected at times in July, just as the planned plant maintenance in May. Fortunately, solar generated and wind power both at times helped alleviate stress on the grid when it was needed. In fact, during the first quarter of this year, 34% of all our power came from wind and solar. The bottom line is that we need it all. We need every megawatt we can get, every form and all types of energy for different inflection points, from the blistering cold of winter to the sweltering heat of summer. The Texas population is growing rapidly, thus increasing demand, so we know this challenge isn't going away. We need long-term solutions to both increase energy production from all sources and, of course, find ways to bring that power to Texas consumers. Following the tragic and deadly winter storm, the governor, legislators, and regulators worked to ensure this never happens again, passing legislation, appointing new regulators, and holding hearings. Thankfully, we got through this past winter with no real issues, but now the summer heat is repeatedly bringing us close to the brink. Having worked in and around the energy sector for several years, it's clear to me we need more energy, not less. Rather than our government picking winners and losers by creating advantages for one form of energy over another, we need to incentivize all commercially viable energy forms and the infrastructure necessary to move that energy. If we are truly a free market, the most efficient and reliable sources of power will prevail. With unpredictable and extreme weather now a regular occurrence in our state, we must expect the unexpected and prepare for worst-case scenarios. Policymakers and regulators have a difficult but vital job. Texas has the 9th largest economy in the world, and it is booming because of industries that rely on reliable, affordable electricity. People need air conditioning in the summer and heat in the winter, and they should be able to rely on our grid to perform. Texas must focus on increasing overall supply of all kinds to meet growing demand. Anything else risks future grid collapse. Kate Zakowski is Vice President, Strategic Communications, MWC Advocacy. She has 12 years of corporate communications experience, including for both public and private companies in the energy industry and at the Texas Railroad Commission. Increase in U.S. oil to curtail high prices, by Doug Polk, contributor. As a retired energy supplier from Houston who spent my career working on the ground to generate energy, I'm concerned with the current state of America's energy security. By now, it has become painfully clear that Russia's invasion of Ukraine doesn't just mean trouble for Eastern Europe. It's also having ripple effects here in the U.S., as energy prices have been sent soaring, including gas prices reaching over $5 per gallon on average in many states. With prices like these, we need to be engaging in conversation surrounding real solutions. The best way to lower gas prices is by increasing domestic energy production. Americans should rightfully be concerned for Ukraine, a democratic ally of the U.S., but they shouldn't ignore one of the truths emerging from the current conflict. If we don't take advantage of our domestic energy resources, consumers will continue to be subject to the whims of geopolitics, including mercurial dictators like Vladimir Putin. Despite America's energy boom, the U.S. still remains far too dependent on foreign oil, including oil from Russia. In fact, we imported a record 245 million barrels of crude oil and related petroleum products from Russia last year, an astonishing 79% increase from just 4 years ago. President Biden just visited Saudi Arabia and continues to look abroad for increased oil supply instead of looking here. The problem here is that Russian state-owned companies have substantial holdings in Venezuela, and Saudi Arabia also isn't a reliable business partner. Looking to foreign actors not only hurts U.S. production potential, but puts our national security at risk. The better solution is to encourage more oil production right here at home. Democratic Senator Joe Manchin shares a similar view. Given the current global situation, it is essential for the United States to step up to the plate as the superpower of the world. That includes the responsible development of our abundant energy and mineral resources. Unfortunately, the Biden administration isn't listening. Instead, they are trotting out familiar anti-fossil fuel talking points. Climate envoy John Kerry said during a recent event that the U.S. absolutely does not need to increase oil and gas drilling. He went so far as to say, suggesting the need for increased energy production is a false narrative. These comments are perfect examples of the real false narrative. Not everyone agrees. Tesla's Elon Musk, a known champion of renewable power, tweeted, "Hate to say it, but we need to increase oil and gas output immediately." Musk went on to explain, "Obviously, this would negatively affect Tesla, but sustainable energy solutions simply cannot react instantaneously to make up for Russian oil and gas exports." Musk is right. The U.S. can't simply fill the void of an oil and gas shortage with renewables. Instead, policymakers should focus on increasing domestic production, including the following three steps. First, the Interior Department needs to fully renew its offshore leasing plan, which expired at the end of June. The new proposed plan that was announced significantly decreases the amount of potential leases and even leaves room for approving no new leases at all. Texas, Louisiana, and other Gulf and Atlantic Coast states have abundant energy resources that could be explored under a new plan. Second, we must approve permits for pipeline projects. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, took us in the wrong direction a couple months ago by increasing regulatory barriers to natural gas pipeline projects. This creates even greater uncertainty about energy supplies, especially in the wake of the president's canceling of Keystone XL, which could have replaced oil from our adversaries with oil from Canada. Third, we need to restore onshore oil and gas drilling leases to their previous conditions. The administration continues to only superficially support increased domestic production. For example, while the Interior Department announced it will resume lease sales on federal lands, the devil is in the details. They actually plan to enact greater restrictions by reducing the acreage available to companies by 80% and raising royalty rates. These increased costs will likely fall to the consumer at a time of record inflation. The path for policymakers is clear. Stop blocking U.S. energy production and start approving pipelines and taking steps to unleash American energy. That's the best way to ensure that the U.S. ends its reliance on foreign energy supplies and creates the kind of energy security that serves us all. Doug Polk, a resident of Houston, is a retired energy supplier who previously worked for Vallourec USA and Halliburton and served in the United States Marine Corps.
Ceramides and cholesterol. Dear Dr. Roach, I have some anti-aging, wrinkle-reducing serums that are ceramide time-release capsules for external use. Are these ceramides related to the ceramides in cholesterol? Will your body absorb extra cholesterol if you use them? Are the serum capsules safe to use on my skin? SB. Answer: ceramides are a diverse group of waxy molecules that form part of the protective layer of the outer skin. Free fatty acids and cholesterol are also fatty molecules found in the outer skin, but ceramides are not closely related to cholesterol. Ceramides are increasingly used for skincare creams. Some creams use the same ratio of ceramides, cholesterol, and fatty free acids as is found in skin. These are safe to use and effective for many people. Your body does not absorb them or use them for energy, so they do not affect your blood cholesterol or risk for heart disease.
Twin sister decides she rules the roost. Dear Abby, when my husband died 2 months ago, my identical twin helped me move in with her. She never married. I do all the chores, clean 6 litter boxes, load and unload the dishwasher, etc. I don't know how to operate her washer-dryer, as she has shown me only once. She doesn't like the way I use my phone, set up files, nothing. She also drinks a lot, uses marijuana, and is on a starvation diet. If I eat any carbohydrates at dinner, she accuses me of being a glutton. At first, she was happy I was here because of a previous visit. She said I was her drinking buddy. I don't usually care much about eating since my sense of taste is poor. Last night, because I could taste the dinner, I ate more. She accused me of being a glutton and a parasite. She has, as far back as I can remember, always been my way or the highway. I'm tempted to go live in my truck to avoid her constant sniping. I have no money yet. She loaned me $4,500 and feels that any money I receive from now on must go directly to her. Please help me. Signed, Unhappy Twin in Michigan. Dear Unhappy, please accept my sympathy for the loss of your husband. While moving in with your sister may have seemed like a good idea while you were in shock and the initial stages of grieving, unless you want to be her maid for the rest of your days, make other living arrangements. You are being treated like Cinderella. Repay the loan in installments after you find a job where the estate is settled. Your sister may have always been the dominant twin, but what you are experiencing now is abuse, and for the sake of your mental health, you cannot allow it to continue. Dear Abby, I had a man as a roommate for a year while he worked in town. Rodney was a wonderful roommate. After his lease ran out and he was transferred elsewhere, he came clean about his feelings for me. Then the pandemic happened and he disappeared for 2 years. Rodney is now back and wants to live with me part-time again. This time he wants more intimacy. He's kind and helpful around the house. He's divorced, very smooth, and has a residence 1,000 miles from here. I don't want to be friends with benefits. I don't know him well enough to know if I want more, but I enjoy his company a lot. I'm in my 60s and young-looking, so why not just have a good time? I still don't want him to be hurt. Any advice? Signed, Roommate Romance in California. Dear roommate, sex with you should not be part of Rodney's lease agreement. What he is proposing seems more like a business deal than an attempt to court you. If you are looking for a relationship that could lead to something more, do not jump into this without carefully weighing the pros and cons, including the emotional risk involved. If you were willing to settle for a good time, you wouldn't be writing to me.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.